Yo, and welcome to the 40th episode of Lake of Rage, a Pokemon trading card game podcast. I am your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, aka Mellow underscore Magikarp, and I'm joined today by two very special temporary guest hosts. Joining us again this week is Locke, aka Dullock.
Yo, what's up?
And joining us for the first time, a special temporary guest host, we have Lee Bui, aka Lee.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing?
We got a special one for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about the current standard format and some of Lee's, I'm going to call them interesting takes on decks that we keep seeing pop up in top cuts all over the place. And then we're going to get some questions from Twitch chat. Oh, I almost forgot. We're going to do some rapid strike questions as well to get to know Lee a little bit better. And then before we get started too, anyone who is currently listening, in the description box, either of the YouTube video or of your favorite podcast app, there is a short Google Form survey. If you could fill that out to help us shape the podcast in 2022, it would be amazing. We already have over 60 responses, which is actually kind of amazing because normally doing surveys, it's really hard to get people to say anything. And some of the suggestions have been super good. So we're going to start working on them for sure. So if you could please do that, it would be greatly appreciated. Yes, someone is reading them and that's me. And I will take all of the feedback to heart, whether positive or constructive. But anyway, Lee, how you been doing this past week?
Pretty good. Mainly just been practicing my bowling, eating a lot of Buffalo Wild Wings, watching a lot of football. Same old, same old.
So I got to bring up the bowling because I feel like no one in the community knows this. Lee, how good?
Sometimes I tweet about it, but yeah, I'm training to become a professional bowler. So most of my time, I'm either at the gym working out or I'm just at the bowling alley, just getting in as many reps as I can. And outside of that, I just like eating chicken wings, a lot of chicken wings. That's a breakdown on my life right now.
Wait, so my question is, favorite B-Dubs flavor then?
I love the Asian Zing right now that they have. I'm Asian, so I guess it's obvious I like it, but I think it's just really, it's a good balance of flavors and that flavor particularly.
So Lee, I got to ask, because there's got to be someone listening who wants to know. What's your average? And is it better than mine, which is about 105?
I would say on a good day, obviously, the weird thing about bowling is sometimes you have really good days, sometimes you have really bad days. So usually on my good days, my average is about 235, which is around the pro average. And on my bad days, it's about 180. So I guess that depends on the day.
That's very good. I know it's going to be high, but I was like, oh my gosh, that's actually, you're very good at the game.
Yeah, a lot of practice, yeah. It took a lot of bad scores to get to where I'm at, but I'm glad I stuck with it.
And Locke, how's your week been going?
I was doing all right. We had to get some fill-ins for you, Mellow, because you bailed on our Unite tournament. So,
yeah, how'd the team do without me?
Well, we still won a round. So we've never lost 0-2 drop before. So we at least won a round.
I mean, 0-2 drop is one of those, like, I don't know. My quick 0-2, I've 0-2 dropped once in my life, and it was with Nagquag. I don't know. Have you two ever, or what decks have you, yeah, I know you have. What decks have you gone 0-2 drop with?
I actually like playing still. So it would usually take me like 0-5 drop to make me drop.
What? Bro, that's too... No. That's too... You like playing too much.
I can't remember the last time I went 0-2 drop. Probably, I'm pretty sure one of those tournaments that I played a lot of Blounds, I probably went 0-2 drop at a couple of them, obviously, because you know how Blounds can be sometimes with the double brick, so I'm assuming one of those, but it has been a while since I've gone 0-2 drop.
Oh, yeah, every Blound, Big Blound, Baby Blound, all of those have been a struggle to play sometimes. So Lee, we're going to do some rapid strike questions. You're going to have 60 seconds to answer as many of them as you can. No thinking, no explanation. Just straight off the dome, the first thing that comes to your mind.
All right, hit me.
All right, here we go. Question number one. What's your go-to movie theater snack?
Popcorn.
Riffle Shuffle or Mash Shuffle?
Riffle Shuffle.
Disney, Cartoon Network, or Nickelodeon?
Disney.
If you could beat anyone in the TCG, who would it be?
Azul.
What color sleeves do you use?
Blue.
Cooking or cleaning?
Cooking.
Juniper, Sycamore, Oak, or Magnolia?
Juniper.
Favorite deck you've ever played?
Zorazodia.
Ice cream cake or brownie?
Ice cream cake.
Mario Bros. Or Legend of Zelda?
Mario Bros.
Rate your karaoke skills on a scale of 1 to Beyonce.
Beyonce. Plus 1.
Last show you binge watched?
Friends.
Wake up early or stayed up late?
Staying up late.
Can you drive a stick shift?
No.
If someone played you in a movie of your life, who would it be?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
If you ever get arrested, what would it be for?
Vandalism.
And that's time. But, bro, I gotta give you credit. I think that's a tie for the most amount of questions. You got 16 questions in 60 seconds.
Let's go.
I think you were the best answerer of every person that we ever had on. Because, like, I think Mello and some other people got more, but they were so softball questions, like one or two. Well, you got like open-ended questions, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are always fun.
So we got to go back to Leo real quick. Why? How is that your go-to actor?
Because I loved him in Titanic. That's pretty much my reason. Hey, it's a classic. I admit it. I love those cheesy romantic films sometimes. Titanic's still a good one for me.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. And then ice cream cake.
Yeah, I think brownies are always, they always feel a bit too heavy for me, and I like the, like, the relief that the ice cream from the cake, you know, differs. The ice cream gives you a little bit of lightness to counteract with the heaviness of the cake. That's why I like ice cream cake.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're both good answers, so I didn't care if which one you picked.
No, I think
if it was regular cake, then I'd definitely pick brownies then.
I don't know if I can do regular cake, but ice cream cake, yeah. I can do all day. Yeah.
The ice cream cake's trash.
That's cap. No.
No, it's too cold. That's cap. No one likes cold.
You put anything with ice cream and it immediately becomes better.
Nah, it's not. No. But anyway, we're not a food podcast. We're a Pokemon podcast. Yeah. Although
Mel would be fired if this was a food podcast.
Bro, it's not my fault. You all have the worst takes in the world.
Excuse me, mister, I don't like pho. Mm-mm.
I don't. It's not. It's just dirty water. Why would you want it?
How could you? If only this wasn't your podcast, I would scream you out.
All right, so Lee, I think the biggest reason people see you all the time right now is, I mean, at the top cut of like every single tournament, it feels like. But every time you have a list, it is interesting to say the least, whether it's Quad Victini or Ice Rider Hammers, or whatever else. So, I gotta know, are you actually playing these decks, or are you memeing right now because online tournaments are something fun to do?
I wouldn't say I'm memeing. I mean, certainly, like, when the ideas start coming up, we think of it as a meme. I like to talk to Tate Whiteso about this a lot. Usually, whenever most of my, like, ideas come from not actually playing, sometimes, like, I'll just be walking on the street or eating something. I'm like, what if I pair this with this? And then, you know, when you start actually work on it, it's like, oh, this is actually good, and it's good against the meta right now. So that's how most of my ideas, like the Victini deck came up. It's like, Victini, good against Vs, good against Vmaxes, and energy disruptions always been good, especially in this current format. So why not add in a couple Crushing Hammers, a couple Phantom Waves? The biggest thing was finding enough draw supporters to help support. Since you don't run Drizzyles, obviously you can't. Your consistency is lacking a bit. So me and Tate were discussing like other draw supports we could use. We started off with Zinnia's Resolve, realized that players could play around that. And then I was just looking through the card list of that current set, and Kabu just ended up being there. So, and luckily, Kabu's an engine that can be paired with a lot of different Pokemon. So it was a good starting point for a lot of the decks that I've been using this format.
I do love Kabu, though. That's one. Back when Tord played the Senescorch Magneton, that was a card that's just like, wait, 8? I get to draw 8 cards? This is broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did you and Tate become testing partners, and why did you choose Tate?
Well, the simple answer is I needed to borrow a PTCGO account, and Tate was actually the first person I messaged. Just like, hey, can I borrow your TCGO account to, I want to get some testing in for Dallas Regionals like 2 years ago. So I was like, hey, let me borrow your account. He's like, oh yeah, sure, go for it. And you know, ever since then, yeah, we just become testing partners consistently. Obviously, we're part of Team Undaunted, so a lot of us get together and discuss ideas. But yeah, Tate's usually my main guy when it comes to having ridiculous ideas. I think he's him along with Frank Persick are like supporters of wacky ideas. So it's just nice to have someone be like, hey, it's 3 a.m., but I'm going to message you with this idea so I don't forget it when I go to sleep kind of guy. So yeah, shout out to Tate for being a homie.
Was that the Dallas Regionals you played Lucario where we hit each other?
It was, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Don't play that deck, by the way. I don't know how Sosa makes it work, but don't play it.
At that, bro, it feels so bad. We flew across the country. Round one may as well have just been a League Cup. It was like, how did this happen?
Oh, God. Yeah, we hit at Portland Regionals and Dallas Regionals. It's like, dang, we should have just played in Washington.
And then let's go back real quick, because this is something I just want to talk about. We'll get to Crushing Hammers, don't worry. But your best finish is Anaheim 2018?
Yes, Anaheim 2018, yes.
With Zoro Exodia, literally the most cursed deck to have existed. I think everyone who hated Expanded Trevenor never had to play against Zoro Exodia. So can you quickly give us a rundown of what was Zoro Exodia and how'd you come up with it? Or how'd you come up with your version of it, I guess?
Yeah, so Zoro Exodia was basically a combo of Zoro GX, which was the most broken card in the game back then. I think, honestly, it's probably one of the top three broken cards in the game of all time. And I was like, we have Let Loose, Marsh Shadow, and Red Card. And those can both be played on the first turn to limit your opponent's options. I was like, what other cards can we pair with red cards? So if you put your opponent down to four cards, what can get rid of some of their four cards? And we found Delinquent and Skyfield. And obviously most Zoroark decks ran Skyfield at that time. So we were like, if we just pair Delinquent with it, then we get our opponent down to one card. And then one of my testing partners, Eugene Brown, was the one that came up with the Peaking Red card, where you can just look at your opponent's one card and shuffle it back in if they have a viable card, like a supporter or something. So that's how Zoro Exodia was created. We tested a lot of different versions. We first started off with the unknown version because we wanted to protect ourselves from Let Loose as often as we can. So the thinking was, if we have unknown on the bench, before we let loose, we can draw out of it so we don't accidentally break ourselves. But then we decided for Shaman was just easily the way to go because Shaman's just a broken card.
Yeah, this thing was just so disgusting to watch in action. Seemingly every League Cup, I think it was like half the room of just this. All right, turn one, I'm going to red card or let loose you. I'm going to delinquent you and then good luck. And it's like, I didn't take a turn yet. Why do I have one card left in my hand?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun at the Anaheim Regionals. It was particularly good at that one because no one knew about it. So, and luckily, most of the field was Zoroark. So it was just nice to go turn one, red card, delinquent, Peaking Red card, and just destroy your opponent turn one. So that was a really fun regionals. Honestly, that was probably the smoothest ride out of regionals I'll probably ever have, just because no one was prepared for it. But I mean, it shows how good testing can be. If you just perfect a deck and no one's ready for it, then you can just run through the competition sometimes.
Wait, how many cards did you get banned with that deck? Or eventually got banned?
I think they banned Let Loose and Delinquent, so I guess the two... Did they ban Let Loose? I know they banned Delinquent at least, but yeah, I guess one or two cards from that combo was banned.
Because then, is Red Card still legal? Question mark?
Is it?
I actually don't know.
Yeah, I actually don't know either. Don't remember, not gonna lie.
I thought that was banned, too.
I thought so. I think
was
so,
that
too,
banned as well? But, yeah.
But. Did it get banned? Because I remember Portland deciding between Red Card and reset stamp in the deck or in my deck, and so I'm not actually, but that was after Let Loose got banned or before Let Loose got banned. I have no idea. I should know this.
Yeah, I think Let Loose got banned after Portland. I'm honestly not sure if Red Card, okay. I think Red Card got banned too, right?
Chat saying Red Card is banned, so sick.
Yeah, okay, so I guess more. Red Card and Delinquent both got banned from that combo, so that was honestly a cool feeling, you know, knowing that your testing group and the deck you played helped get two cards banned. So it's a A small bragging right there, if you can say that.
So unfortunate. I love Delinquent, but I played it in a fair quote-unquote manner. You had to ruin it for me.
Right. I had to be toxic because I really wanted that semifinalist trophy. that cool piece of glass. So,
what'd you end up losing to in the end?
I ended up losing to Vespiquen, unfortunately. Because unfortunately, my deck bricked in top four. But I mean, I ran hot the entire tournament, so I can't really complain about that.
It's hard to be mad at a top four regional. It's better than I've done. So definitely, right. I'm going to catch up to you eventually. Every time
I believe in you, man.
It's that thing looming over is everyone like, who's the best player in Washington? It's like, bro, Lee's top cut a tournament recently. Like, that's the one. Like, as soon as I get that over you, I'm like, nah, he's dude's trash. Yeah. That and your head-to-head record.
Three months to get back to our in-person rivalry. So can't wait.
Are you staying in Washington?
For the foreseeable future, yes.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I get to beat you. Oh, that's not true. You're going to beat me constantly with your completely off-meta jank that you bring to League Cups.
Yes, the Bulu and the Lucario are the two that come to my memory, unless you remember anymore.
Those are yes, because real quick story, Lee can elaborate on this if he wants, but I brought Regigigas Hoopa to the team up format. It beats Zoroark, it beats Pikarom, very good play into the field. And then in top four, I run into Vika Bulu being piloted by Lee, which had no business in the meta. Because A, the Rayquaza version should have just been better, and B, Vika Bulu was actually meta over a year ago, and so he bodied me.
Right, I think the funny thing about that particular cup was I was planning on playing Sylveon, because DeAndre lent me Sylveon cards, but we didn't realize like half the deck rotated or something like that, so we were like, oh shoot, well, I can't exactly play an illegal deck in the cup, so I was like, okay, what else do I have? I was like, the most... All my decks were like pretty incomplete at this time because I was switching cards around constantly. I was like, well, the only thing I have somewhat close to finish is Bulu. So I ended up just borrowing a couple Bulu cards from some friends at the cup. And we're like, all right, we'll roll with it. And we're like, oh, at least we'll beat Zoroark, right? We'll beat Zoroark and stall decks. And that's all I can really ask for.
And it definitely worked out. You won that cup. And bro, I'm still in shock how Bulu won a cup a year after.
Yeah, I think I went like... Yeah, I think I went 4-0-1 and then just sweep through cut. So it was a nice, relaxing cup for me.
And then the other two times you bodied me were you were playing Lucario, and one of them I was playing a Honchkrow stall deck. It wasn't like the straight Honchkrow. It was like there was Regigigas and stuff like that. And I was like, all right, I beat everything in the meta. And then you come in with Lucario, which I had not accounted for. Miserable. And then the next cup I played Shock Lock, and again you're playing Lucario with Scoop Up Cyclone.
Oh yes, the Lucario with Scoop Up Cyclone and Escape Rope. So two great counters there, unintentional counters, but great counters.
Yeah, unintentional. It felt so bad. It was like, oh my gosh, your Ryolu Okos me, and then you evolve, and then you just scoop up Cyclone. It was miserable experience.
Yes, the Riolu jab. I remember that particularly because Riolu Strong Energy Muscle Band Diancie was a pretty strong thing back then.
Yeah, unfortunately, it KOs all of the dogs in Shock Lock.
Yeah.
So how do you do well with this jank? Like, you even mentioned you're going to play a cup, and this is team-up format. This was like January or February or something like that. And you're like, oh, half the cards rotate in the deck I wanted to play. How do you show up and do so well consistently? How long have you been playing? You know, how much do you play? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, usually for me, I'm not really much of a meta deck type of guy. I mean, I'll play meta decks every now and then if I feel like it's consistent and solid enough for the format. But usually I like to play things, you know, that are kind of off-kilter, things that no one expects it. And honestly, I always say this, people may disagree with me, but it doesn't really matter what deck you play as long as you're comfortable enough with it to play it optimally. So that's usually a mindset I go into every regionals, every cup. It's just play the best you can, and if it works out, like the matchups work out, the deck runs smoothly, then you'll do well with it.
So what other advice would you have to people who like to play jank? Like, because you see success with every piece of jank that you seem to touch. So how are you more successful than so many other people are with them?
Yeah, I guess I would say just putting in a lot of testing. You know, testing doesn't have to be, oh, let's sit down for, you know, 5 to 6 hours straight with a couple friends and try to make a broken deck. It can be just coming up with random ideas. Like I said, most of my quote-unquote great ideas for this format, particularly like the Victini, the Quad Victini, the Quad Dragapult, they've just been random ideas that pop up when, you know, I'm eating dinner or just doing my regular everyday routine. So just putting in the work, testing with friends, just communication with your testing partners is always a great thing. You know, you don't always have the time to just sit down on PTGO and play some games up, but just talking back and forth, sharing ideas, sharing your ideas and taking into consideration other people's ideas, it makes for a great engine to work on.
Yeah, I do want to add, like, most of the time, like, when I'm playing Jank, I know what my opponent's deck does, but they don't know what my deck does. So even if it's the first time I'm playing this matchup, I got, like, a good theory of how this matchup should go, while they have no clue what's coming for them.
Right, I think that's a good point. And that's one of the great things I love about Jank decks is sometimes your opponent either doesn't know what you're playing or doesn't know how to play optimally against it. So, for example, with, say, the Quad Victini deck, right, with 4 Crushing Hammer and 4 Fans, sometimes they'll attach an extra energy to a Pokemon that's going to get knocked out because they're afraid I'm going to get rid of the energy, but that's suboptimal play because I'm going to be knocking their Pokemon out. So it just forces your opponent to do a lot of weird, situations. They might play suboptimally, or they might play optimally, but it's just not the way the game is playing out that it works out for them. So that's kind of the cool thing about Jank decks is you always have the element surprise, which I don't feel like you get if you're playing a meta deck.
Let's go back to hammers real quick. This is the big, I feel like you are constantly tweeting out decks that are just regular decks with 4 hammers in them. What are your thoughts? Like, sell me on hammers, because I am team hammers not that good in this meta.
Yeah, dude, I think I've been playing hammers for quite a while. I think the first weird instance where I played hammers was in Blounds when I was just I was only just bored one day and I was like, okay, we'll throw hammer in Blounds. I think it was to troll Azul, I remember, because I told him that I was gonna run Blounds with 4 hammers and 2 Jirachi, and he got so mad, and then I ended up doing well with it. So it was, yeah, that was a fun time. But
yeah, you made cup once, like, with that, right?
I made cut a couple times with that. Yeah, I ended up losing to Azul in top 8 of a tournament too. So, I mean, it ended up working out. It was pretty funny, not gonna lie. It's a pretty hilarious just throwing hammers and blasts and doing well with it. And it ended up being really good for that particular meta because it got rid of a coding energy off Luke Meadow, which is a really, really funny. And then I think throwing hammers in Ice Tray was just an idea when I was hanging out with Tate. You're like, hey, we got to do well with hammers and Ice Tray, and then we can tweet about it. So that was the other motivation behind playing hammers and Ice Tray. And then obviously hammers making its way into Quad Victini and Quad Dragapult. That was more of a less meme situation, if you could say that, because it just fit well with that particular style of deck. So yeah, those are some of the ways that hammers have been incorporated into my deck so far.
Okay, so thank you for clarifying the very important Hammer Blounds was in fact a meme.
Yeah, I remember because I had a lot of people like message me on Discord or Twitter, like, is Hammer Blounds actually this good? I was like, I mean, it's not, but I mean, it works, I guess. It's not good, but it works, right?
It's like, and Blounds is good.
Really ask for. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. So you shouldn't go throwing hammers into everything. Except Victini. I will admit, Victini is such a bad deck, they need hammers.
Yeah, I mean, you could technically throw hammers in every deck in this current format. I mean, I've seen some Mew players run hammers along with the Cram-O-Matic, which is kind of cool because you can Cram-O-Matic and search for the hammers and then flip again for the hammers. I think that's pretty fun, actually. I think that's the only thing I like about Mew is the fact that you can do that. But yeah, I mean, if you want to test your luck with some flips, I would suggest going hammers. It's a pretty good card. So
it's how long till we get Opal in these decks?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what I come up with in the next week. Maybe Opal will jump into one of my decks soon. You never know.
Hey, I definitely got
we'll say like Opals. A year ago. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I really liked Opal a year ago. And a year ago, most of the VMAX decks were like attached attack. So a hammer was actually pretty good. So
I think ADP Zacian Hammers was running the format for a while too. Yeah, I think that was actually my first time playing hammers in a meta deck. Oh, besides the obvious Pika, but yeah, just throwing hammers in ADP Zacian and was pretty fun.
So are you still looking to break the format, or are you kind of content with, I brought you Victini, everyone should just be happy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm never satisfied with how much I put into the, because mainly it's just, I want to know that at the end of the day, I want to know that I did the most I can with the time I have to play Pokemon. So I'm always trying to come up with new ideas, you know, never trying to settle for, oh yeah, these decks are already pre-made for me. You know, we have lists on Limitless now. It's like, oh yeah, I can just copy some of these lists and play it in tournaments. I'm always trying to invent something, you know. I think it's really cool when you just build something from scratch and make it good. I think it's hard to find a feeling in Pokemon that surpasses that, in my opinion.
As someone who net decks and then makes slight edits, I'm going to have to take your word for that, because there's very little creativity going on in this brain, except take 6 prizes and we're good. Or win the other way. I guess that's true. So I also wanted to ask about your season. So you're at Worlds in DC. Are you going to be at Worlds in London? Are you going to find your way over there?
I mean, 2 years ago, I was like, London, that's so far. I'm not going to go for that. But I don't know. Ever since COVID, I'm always having the itch to travel now. So honestly, if I get there, I'll probably make the Worlds in London. I think it's cool. I never actually been out of the U.S. besides, you know, going to Canada. So I think that'd be a pretty cool experience to have. Just Worlds in London and also having a chance to see a different country outside of the U.S.
Wow, see, that's
I was the same way. Yeah.
So how far away are you from your invite? I feel like you got to be close.
I'm not even sure. Yeah, it's been so long since I actually checked those points. I guess I'll just keep trying to do well at events, and I'll see how the points add up at the end. Is usually my mentality.
Yeah, that's such a good mentality. There's no like stress of, oh, I need to hit 500. It's just like, I'm just going to show up and see what happens.
Yeah, it's always, that's something I try to avoid as best I can, like not look at the things I have accomplished so far, just keep looking forward. And then, you know, obviously at the end of the season, I'll look at the points and hopefully I'll be where I'm at. But yeah, I try not to look at the points that I gathered throughout the season, you know, I just put them all up towards the end. And if I did well enough at the end to garner that invite, then yay. If not, I know I went out doing the best I could.
What events are you planning on attending? Like regionals, internationals.
Yeah, definitely West Coast regionals. So obviously Utah in March. And honestly, I haven't looked that far yet. I'm just really excited to get back to playing real life Pokemon whenever I get the chance. So hopefully Utah will be a good time.
Let's go. I can't wait to hit your round 2 in Utah and lose. Let's get into some questions from Twitch chat. So anyone in chat, you're welcome to redeem, ask a question. But the first one from Slapjacks13, what is the best type of M&M?
Oh God. When was the last time I had an M&M? It's a better question. But,
Wait, really?
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I had an M&M. I'm more of a Hershey's guy. So, or like Hershey's, the bar, milk chocolate, that kind of thing.
Okay. So, I can't even get behind. M&M's are just so good. Just grab a massive handful and shove it in your mouth.
Dude, I guess when I was a little kid, I guess the brown ones, maybe? That's probably a boring answer. I know, that's probably a boring answer, but I was like, it's chocolate. Why is chocolate red and green and yellow and blue? It's like, it doesn't make sense to me as a kid. So I always just like the brown ones because it's like, okay, this color represents chocolate more than these other colors, right?
Bro, see,
I think the
now
real question was like, yeah, like the type of M&M, like peanut or whatever, but
I thought you were my color.
Yeah. So I guess I'll probably say like I think there's like some crispy ones with like the like rice in it. Like the rice puff ones. I don't know if they ever make them.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, Locke. Those are a thing.
I guess the original ones, if I had to guess. I'm not sure how many different variants of M&Ms there are since I last ate them, so I wouldn't actually know. So I'll go original.
Next time we're at tabletop together, I will bring you M&Ms, Lee.
All right. I'll expand my taste buds, I guess.
I do love, though, as a real quick aside, I do an M&M lab with some of my students. And the idea is we're trying to figure out if the breakdown of colors, blah, 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 math, whatever. And I always say, like, oh, my favorite flavor is blue. And the anger that they all get when they're like, they're not different flavors is so amazing. So I love so much that you went to, oh, the brown ones are the best.
Right, yeah, because that's the color that represents chocolate the most, right? Like, chocolate can't be red and blue and green, right?
I mean, it is, yeah. The brown ones are chocolate flavored. I agree.
Yeah.
Sancho asks, what is the proper go-to food to have for Christmas?
Oh, for Christmas?
So I'll start off just because I had the chance to actually think of the question. For me, my dad's side of the family is full-blown Italian. So every year we go to my grandma's house for meatballs and sausage and whatever form of anything else she wants. But bro, the meatballs are it. So for me, Christmas food is Italian food. Because it's so good. Again, meatballs, 100% the best. Literally melts in your mouth. Oh, it's so good. I can't wait.
That sounds pretty
good. You know, I don't mind that answer, Mello, all right? So props on that.
Well, let's go. I got a food question, right?
Let's see. I mean, I guess being Asian, most of our like holiday parties are just filled with Asian food. So, you know, spring rolls, egg rolls, any type of noodles. So it's a I guess there's not really a difference between the types of food we have on different holidays. It's just always Asian food in my family, at least.
Locke, what about you?
So my family does turkey for Christmas because, like, after Thanksgiving, it's like $1 or $2 a pound. So, like, it's like half off or like 80% off at some places. So, yeah, it's the cheap route.
Bro, you love the budget choice.
Yeah.
The further I get into adulthood, the more I respect it. CLS asks, thoughts on if there were an A-spec style supporter that said, take a prize card, and then it went to the lost zone.
Ooh.
What was that? Too broken? Not broken enough? Unplayable?
See,
100% playable.
I mean, okay.
If you're playing if you're playing like a single prize deck, it's an automatic include, easily.
Yeah, that seems kind of broken. Holy, just take a prize card. I mean, you don't get to use it, but still, limiting your prize card just by playing one card.
Yeah,
that's pretty broken. Not gonna lie. So
it's worth. It's more valuable than a research for a turn.
Right. Right. Wow.
Yeah. Now, but research could get you a knockout for a prize. Now we're
if
talking.
You draw the necessary cards after that.
Yeah, I think just going back to, like, what was it, Kartana GX? Or even Blown GX. Like, one of the reasons why Blacephalon suffered a bit after rotation was just losing the Blown GX was so tough. Because before, reset stamp to one meant you just win the game anyway. So yeah, cards like that are just, it's got to be absolutely broken. I also don't put it.
And it's not even an attack. That's the thing I'm thinking about. It's just a supporter for turn, which is better than using an attack. You know.
Oh wait, that's true.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I think that's a little too broken right there, CLS.
Yeah, that's actually gross. Now that you mentioned that, it's like, oh, I can actually take a multi. Yeah, no. I'd have to say you also can't attack in addition to going to the lost zone. And...
Right, right. I think I would agree with that. Like, that'd be better. Like, just taking a prize card with a supporter card and then knocking something out for more prize cards. I think that's a little too toxic for my taste.
No, you just do that and you rapid flow in the same turn. Now we're talking. No. Get Wrecked asks, why no 4 Jirachi in Blacephalon?
Because I'm greedy and I hate having extra Jirachis in the middle of the game when I don't need them. It's like you only need 2 Jirachi a game theoretically, so if you have 3, you prize 1, you still have 2 Jirachi. Or the entirety of the game is my reasoning for it. Again, a lot of players like to play 4, which I don't really blame them because it's more consistent, but I wanted to fit a couple more techs in, and I didn't feel the need for four Jirachi. I think out of, what, the 200 games I played with Blounds, I played, like, four Jirachi and five of them or something. So, never really been a big fan of four Jirachi, but I guess you could argue it's more consistent.
I love that you could argue it if you wanted.
I'm like halfway in between. Like, I played like four Jirachi probably like 50% of the time. So not as low as Lee, but not as high as most players. So
I made it work with two Jirachi a couple times, right? So obviously you don't need four. You can just have two.
Yeah, I'm always team four Jirachi. I want Jirachi back. I want a starter like that again. But yeah, because I feel like every time I start Jirachi with Stellar Wish, I literally cannot lose the game. Like, I see my opening hand, and I'm just like, all right, GG's. Like, you should just scoop now, opponent.
Yeah, it is a good feeling when you just start Jirachi. And it's even better feeling when you start a Jirachi while only running three. It's hard to beat that type of feeling, not gonna lie.
Oh, let's go back to times Lee beat me. We were playing the Tempozard mirror match. Him and his like two Jirachi list starts Jirachi all three games, and I start Jirachi zero games. So bad.
Oh man, I remember that. Wow. Yeah. Good time.
And this is also a counter argument for the four Jirachis. When you don't start that Jirachi, when you play the four Jirachis, the game feels so bad.
Yep.
Bro, that was so upsetting. I started Cramorant too. I play one Cramorant.
Yeah, start the one or two of Cramorant and not the four of Jirachi. Yep. That's how the game works.
I need a new game. 007 Derp asks, what's the easiest way to qualify for Worlds? Grind locals, attend big tournaments, etc. So Lee, any advice?
I guess, honestly, the easiest way is to grind locals. I personally don't like that because I feel like you're not challenging yourself enough if you just grind locals. So I try to get most of my points from large events like regionals and internationals if I can. But I guess you could argue easiest way is just play as many local events as you can, get as much points as you can from them, and then just get a couple, you know, top 64, top 128 points from regionals.
And then Locke, you're on the other side of the country. So what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I think the easier way is actually going to like fly to every regional and getting like 50 points at a regional. But I actually did it the way you guys are saying because I've been dominating my local area, even though it has four top 16 players in it. So
yeah, I definitely think easiest and going to every regional is like if you got the money, that is technically the easiest way to do it.
Oh god, if I had the money for every regionals, I would definitely go to every regionals.
Bro, wow. Top 16?
That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah.
Or that's not even a thing anymore, I guess. I don't know. We don't know about top 16. But yeah, I think easiest and most financially feasible would be locals. I love you everyone at locals. Thank you for listening to the podcast if you do. But also a lot of y'all make it really free really often. So like
I also don't want to face the same people over and over again if I can help it, you know. Obviously at locals that's bound to happen. You know, I always face Kevin and it seems like every other top 8. So I would like some new competition every now and then, which is why I like just trying my best at regionals and getting as much points of them as I can, as opposed to let's just play these 10 people all the time for points.
That is another like important thing of like the difference between locals and not, because like Corey for a while played ADP in the Cosmic Eclipse format with the Fairy Mimikyu and the Psychic Mimikyu, and it's one of those things that like I just knew he had it, so he wasn't beating my Mewtwo deck, and he's like, this tech's supposed to beat it, and it's like, bro, I've played you four times in the last 3 weeks, like I know it's there. So it's another big benefit of not going to locals all the time when you have these cool techs that are really good.
Alright.
Last question.
Oh,
do you have something else?
Oh yeah, so like I think in Cosmic Eclipse format too, John Ang was playing control against me and he was like, oh, did you know that I took out my what was that stadium that the Champions Festival? I was like, I played you four times in the last 2 weeks. I know you're 60 by now because it's control.
Yeah, at a certain point, locals are just like, You know everyone's deck. You see who's in the room and you're like, you're playing this, you're playing this. You know, you're the Jolteon player. You play single strike. And it's like, which makes it either easier or harder to get your invite, depending on which side of that you're on. Mm-hmm. Last question. Mr. Soda King asks, is it true American chocolate tastes like vomit? What are our thoughts on American
compared
chocolate?
Compared to EU, probably, yeah.
I'm assuming American chocolate, I guess he means Hershey's, that kind of, those kind of brands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I love Hershey's, you know, just the milk bars and stuff. I don't know. I personally love American chocolate.
I do too. I am the American consumer. I love it.
Yeah, those like Ghirardelli with like caramel inside the chocolate. Mm-mm. Hard to beat that.
Now we're talking. So Lee, if the people want more of you, where can they find more of your wonderful Victini Hammers decks and whatnot?
You'll probably see me at online events. So if you play in an online event, you might see me whenever I'm available. You can check out my Twitter, LeeBui18. I usually post my list there whenever I play an event. So, or whenever I come up with a cool idea that I think is worth sharing, I'll post it on my Twitter as well. Yeah, those are the two places you can see me. Obviously, I'm on Undaunted, so sometimes we'll post videos of cool ideas that you can look forward to as well.
Locke, where can the people find you?
Mostly on Discord, but my Twitch is TheLock, and then with an underscore, and my Twitter is TheLock, but with an underscore and a zero in it.
And of course, you can find me, Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at @Mellow_Magikarp. I should have mentioned at the beginning, there's not going to be a podcast next week because I'm going to be gone. And so we're going to take a week off for the holidays, but we'll be back in, I guess, January 1st or like December 31st or something. I don't know. At the last week of December, we'll be back with an episode. So we're taking next week off. And if you have a chance to take that survey, please do, because we've learned some stuff. I've learned some stuff. And it's been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We'll catch you all next week. 2 weeks. We'll catch you all in 2 weeks.